Welcome to Stand in the Gap Today with Sam Rohr, Barry Dahl, and David Kistler of the American Pastors Network, addressing the most critical issues impacting our culture from a biblical and constitutional perspective. Learn more about the work of the American Pastors Network at AmericanPastorsNetwork.net.
Well, ever since Roe v. Wade was passed into law back in 1973, Christians and pro-life advocates have been waging a war against abortion, promoting the fact that even though abortion is legal in the United States, it still is against God's law and therefore sinful. It is murder. Now, many voices have stood for life since 1973, including that of the late Dr. James Kennedy of the Coral Ridge Ministries in Florida. At one particular point in time, he made a statement that, and I quote, "The time will come when, due to medical development and technology, we will be able to prove the fact that life begins at the point of conception," end quote. Well, in many ways, we are there now, I believe, and still people who are pro-abortion insist on slapping God in the face, as it were, who, by the way, is not only pro-life, but the author of life, and yet there are those who want to snuff that life right out from the womb. We're going to be talking to Diane Gramley about that today, but also I want to emphasize that it seems like every day more information comes our way concerning the shooting massacre in Las Vegas. It's safe to say that the authorities know more about what happened out there than what they're willing to reveal to us, and I understand that. As a matter of fact, we may never know the complete story. But today, in segments 2 through 4, Mr. John Guandolo of Understanding the Threat will be with us to discuss the idea that what took place in Las Vegas resembles a jihadi operation. So you'll want to stay tuned for that. Well, hello, I'm Gary Dahl, and along with me today is David Kistler, as Sam Rohr is away. And I want to welcome you to this Thursday edition of Stand in the Gap Today Radio. And today, we are delighted to have with us a friend of mine. She is Diane Gramley, who happens to be the president of the American Family Association of Pennsylvania. Diane, welcome once again to Stand in the Gap Today.
Well, thanks for having me, Pastor Gary. Appreciate the opportunity to speak about this very important bill.
Well, yes, it's a very important bill, and we're going to be discussing this bill that I believe, if passed, will take great strides in reducing the number of abortions that take place in America. The bill we're talking about, ladies and gentlemen, is H.R. 490, referred to as the Heartbeat Protection Act of 2017. This bill was introduced and placed into the House Judiciary Committee on January the 12th, 2017, by Representative Steve King of Iowa, and has about 168 other sponsors representing 37 states of the Union. And Diane, to get started here, please tell our audience about H.R. 490 and why it is so significant to the pro-life movement in America. According to our understanding, this bill amends the federal criminal code to make it a crime for a physician to knowingly perform an abortion under certain circumstances. Is that correct,
yes,
Diane?
Correct. And I think the majority of Americans do not understand that it is perfectly legal in the majority of states in this union to perform an abortion on a perfectly viable baby up until the time of birth. That's basically what Roe v. Wade opened up in 1973. But what H.R. 490 does is it does make it a crime for a physician to knowingly perform an abortion. He has to determine whether the fetus has a detectable heartbeat. That's the first thing he has to do. And he must inform the mother of the result of detecting the heartbeat, whether there's one there or not. And then after determining that a fetus does have a detectable heartbeat, if he performs that abortion, after going through those three steps, if he performs that abortion, then he does face criminal charges.
Wow, Diane, that is a phenomenal, phenomenal thing. Do you know any of the folks that have signed on as co-sponsors of this bill? I know Representative Steve King, who has a solid, solid history of being pro-life, is the one that introduced the bill. But are there any other names that you can give to us so that our nationwide audience can understand if one of their representatives has signed on to sponsor this?
Well, I know that there are 37 co-sponsors, or rather 37 states represented in the bill itself as co-sponsors. We have 9 from Pennsylvania alone, pro-family, pro-life individuals who've signed on. Of course, we have other ones right off the top of my head, I can't think of them. I'm sorry, but it's a significant number. Just the fact that we have 169 counting, Representative King, is just phenomenal that we have that many who are signing on. But I would almost guarantee you that the majority of those are Republicans. As you saw with the recently passed Payne Capable bill, there were only three Democrats who joined the majority of Republicans to vote for that bill. So, unfortunately, the Democrats just are not on board with this.
Now, Diane, is this an all-inclusive bill to prohibit abortion completely, or does it allow for an abortion to be performed in the case of what they call the physical health of the mother being endangered?
Yes, there is that exception, and it is very, very specific about the physical health of the mother being the issue. If there's a physical situation where the mother's life is in danger, then the abortion could be performed. But it specifically says, the bill specifically says that it does not entail any kind of physiological, psychological, or emotional disorder or anything like that. It would not play a role in the decision of the doctor whether to perform an abortion or not. It must specifically be physical.
So, Diane, if a detectable heartbeat is ascertained and a physician were to perform an abortion at that point, he is subject to criminal penalties. Is that correct?
Yes, he is. He'd be subject to a fine and up to 5 years in prison if he did not follow the steps necessary, doing the test to check for the heartbeat, informing the mother, and then performing the abortion. He'd face a fine and up to 5 years in prison.
Wow.
I'm in favor of that.
That's amazing, isn't it, Gary?
Because a baby's heartbeat can be detected about 3 weeks, 1 day after conception. Mm-hmm. So it's definitely a situation where there'd be many babies saved if this bill were to become law. And
we're hoping
that it would become law.
Well, we're rapidly running out of time, Diane, but where is this bill now in Congress, and what should our listeners do to get it on the move and on the fast track?
Well, it is currently in a subcommittee under the Judiciary Committee, and I don't know why they put it under this one. It just sounds strange. But anyway, they have it under the Subcommittee on Crime, Terrorism, Homeland Security, and Investigations. That is one of the five subcommittees under the House Judiciary Committee. The chairman of that committee is Jim Sensenbrenner, a Republican from Wisconsin, and Louie Gohmert is the vice chair of that committee. So, I would encourage your listeners to call their House member, their U.S. House member, mm-hmm. and ask that individual to support H.R. 490. And it's very important that be done soon, because it currently is sitting in that committee. It's been sitting in that subcommittee since February 6th.
Okay.
And there seems to be no interest, unfortunately, in pushing us. We need to get the phone calls into D.C. to make our voices heard.
Very good.
That'll do it.
Very good. Well, Diane Gramley, thank you very much for being with us today. And ladies and gentlemen, we would encourage you to call your congressman and say, support H.R. 490. And let's get this particular bill on the move. Now, when we come back, we are going to be talking with John Guandolo of Understanding the Threat. You won't want to miss this segment.
Back in 1993, MediShare was known as the best-kept secret in healthcare. But not anymore. Today, there are hundreds of thousands of Americans who've discovered what us long-timers have known since the beginning. MediShare is affordable healthcare that really works. The great thing is, we're not an insurance company. We're a nonprofit community. Hundreds of thousands of honest, hardworking people who agree to share each other's medical bills. Every share goes to help a fellow member. And when we say affordable, we mean it's common for our members to save upwards of $500 a month. Best of all, MediShare is always open. You can join anytime. So how about now? Isn't it time you joined MediShare?
Call 844-45-BIBLE to find out how much you can save on your healthcare. MediShare, now available in Montana. Call 844-45-BIBLE. That's 844-45-BIBLE.
Hello, this is Sam Rohr. Although the term Christian education doesn't occur in the Bible, it does speak of the moral and spiritual instruction of children. It places a high value on knowledge, both of God and His works. It describes the moral and spiritual fruits of this knowledge and defines its ultimate purpose, the growth of your child in godliness of character and action. That's why we suggest you consider BJU Press K-12 materials. Your child's a unique individual created for a specific purpose. Proper instruction that includes the Bible and the relational influence of godly teachers produces a pure heart and a willing mind. The Bible calls that success. BJU Press materials are well written, grade level appropriate, and biblically integrated. They teach critical thinking skills and keep your child engaged and excited about learning. If you're a Christian school teacher or administrator, a homeschool teacher, or a parent who just wants your child to learn more, start by exploring the BJU Press website. Visit bjupress.com. That's bjupress.com.
You're listening to Stand in the Gap Today, the daily radio program of the American Pastors Network. For more information, visit the APN website, AmericanPastorsNetwork.net. And now, let's rejoin Stand in the Gap Today.
Welcome back, ladies and gentlemen. We do want to remind you that today is National Take Your Bible to School Day all across the nation, and young people are encouraged to take their Bible to school as a witness for the Lord Jesus Christ. And I would encourage you to pray that God will use that for His honor and glory in bringing the Word of God back into our public schools. Well, John Guandalo, are you with us now, sir?
You bet.
Okay.
Yes, sir.
Well, delighted to have you with us. And ladies and gentlemen, ever since Monday morning when we all woke up to the news that a terrible tragedy took place in Las Vegas, Nevada, and that we recognize now is the most serious single shooting massacre in the history of America, when Stephen Paddock injured at least 500 people and killed 59 others, officials and citizens all across America have been searching for the truth about what happened and why Paddock went on this shooting spree. It may be quite some time until we learn the full truth about what is taking place and what was behind all of these killings, but some of the questions that have been asked ever since Monday morning include, did Stephen Paddock do this all by himself, or were there others involved? How was he able to get such a large arsenal into the hotel room? How long did it take him to plan this massacre? Did others know about his plans? Where did his girlfriend, Mary Lou Danley, come into the picture here? And were there any connections to a foreign country or to ISIS or anything along that line? Well, as you have just heard, today in the program, we welcome back once again Mr. John Guandalo, who is the founder and president of Understanding the Threat, who produced an article recently that gives us another component in this terrible tragedy in Las Vegas to consider. John, I wish to welcome you back to Stand in the Gap today.
Thank you very much. As always, I really enjoy being with you all for these thoughtful discussions.
Well, they are thoughtful discussions, and according to your release on Tuesday, you say, and I quote, before any real information about the shooter was put out via United States media outlets, UTT, that of course is Understanding the Threat, published a tweet at 6:34 a.m. Central Standard Time on Monday, assessing the Las Vegas attack was likely a jihadi operation, end quote. Now, as far as we know, John, UTT was the first organization and perhaps the only organization in America to really reach that conclusion. And so let's take some time throughout the rest of the program to discuss the basis of your assessment that this was a jihadi operation. You, in the article that you sent out the other day, gave five particular statements that lead you to believe that this was a jihadi operation. We're going to go down through these, and we'll name them, and then we'll ask you to explain, if you would, please. The first one that you say is that the Islamic State had previously called for attacks on the United States homeland and has specifically mentioned Las Vegas as a target. Can you elaborate on that for us, please?
Well, I just one of the things we know about the jihadi groups is when they identify targets, at some point they will go through it. So when they name particular places by name or by city, that matters. And as evidenced by the fact that the security services in Las Vegas were actually on, had a pretty heavy security presence at the concert because of that threat.
John, let me ask you this. You also said that last week Islamic State issued a statement through its information outlet, or one of its outlets. It's known as Nasher News, calling for Muslims to avoid places in America, and not just in America, but places where, quote unquote, the Crusaders gather. And they referenced major events like this, 22,000 people who attended this country music concert. They said these are great events to be considered potential targets. Talk about that a little bit and why you think Islamic State has a connection. Because, John, I agree with you. From the get-go, and I appreciate your courage, from the get-go I thought something doesn't make sense here. This is way more than one 64-year-old man doing all of this by himself.
Well, I appreciate you saying that, but you know, for the, I'm okay with people that are skeptical. I have, you know, there have been plenty of people on social media, and even colleagues of mine who have very tepidly, you know, said we're not there yet. And I said, you know, my response to them is, these are people I respect. That's fine. I'm not asking you to be with me on this. All I'm asking is, please provide me a more viable assessment of what is going on. And so far, the answer from some of the nation's leading analysts that I speak with, and from others, including citizens. I mean, look, citizens, you don't have to be a rocket scientist to offer an opinion, although it, you can't offer your opinion on something you're just totally ignorant on. But, I mean, people that are following and have been following the Islamic movement and following the Marxist movement, they look at an event like that, like this, and they're not there. And so I want to say something at the outset is, we've assessed this as a jihadi operation. I am not married to the idea that Paddock, Stephen Paddock himself, converted. That's not necessarily what I'm saying. What we are saying, and nor is it what UTT, because the team is united in this assessment, is that there are a number of possibilities, and I don't like to speculate or talk about things when we don't have facts. That's why I appreciate that you're going down this list of facts, things we know to be true. But I will say this, it is not out of the realm that this is a joint operation. And if it is, like a joint Marxist jihadi operation, a joint Antifa-ISIS operation, where if that's the case, and I'm not saying that it is, but if that were the case, it would certainly explain why, you know, in the event that Paddock did not convert to Islam, that this was a joint operation. And that would actually be the worst case scenario, much worse than simply this guy converted and this was an ISIS situation. We can talk about that if you want, but I'm saying this in reference to this idea that when ISIS puts something out, and they have never, I want to foot stomp this, the idea that Fox is putting out, which is not true, that CNN's putting out, that's not true, that New York Times is putting out, not true, that ISIS has this habit of claiming things, and it's, you know, on the internet and even been mentioned on mainstream media, if you want to call it that, that, you know, ISIS would claim a hurricane, you know, that took care, that destroyed Puerto Rico. Well, that's nonsense. There's no evidence of that ever. And the only time that ISIS has published something that was challenged, where people said, well, this isn't an attack, was this past June in the Philippines, and the Filipino government said it was a robbery. Well, credible international analysts and analysts in the Philippines have looked at that, and I've looked at that, and that is not a credible assessment.
John, let me jump in. I'm sorry to interrupt, but let me jump in and say this. What you're stating, John, needs to be understood by our listening audience, because I did some research as well, and this accusation that ISIS will claim things that they're not responsible for is absolutely false. It is 100% false. They only claim responsibility for things in which they have been involved. So the point you're making, I appreciate greatly, and I think it's something that needs to be drilled down on. Let me ask you this. The concept or the idea that his girlfriend is from the Philippines, the Filipino community, the Philippines itself, is now a major, major place where there is Islamic activity, jihadist activity. That immediately, to me, was a red flag. Is that something that's factored into your assessment as well?
It's become, and we've weaved it into our ongoing analysis. I think, but again, I could give you 10 different things that, you know, we've discussed that are possibilities here. Obviously, and I will just say there was a former assistant director for the FBI on Fox News last night who said what I said yesterday on several media interviews and on Tuesday, and that is this, that we do, that $100,000 that he sent, could it be for his girlfriend to get a house? I'm sure it could be. I'm sure it could be. But until that's drilled down, I like you, I mean, Abu Sayyaf is an Islamic terrorist, you know, jihadist organization in the Philippines that is in open gun battles with the government over there, and in open gun battles, you know, open warfare. So it just, as I look at this, and the thing is, when you look at the facts and just the facts, and then you get and you block out all the other noise, and the idea of ISIS saying Vegas is a target last week, you know, clear the area, sending $100,000 to the Philippines then becomes a much bigger data point.
Ladies and gentlemen, we have just begun this discussion with John Guandalo, who, of course, is the founder and president of Understanding the Threat. And when we come back, we are going to elaborate upon this a little bit more. And John mentioned that he could share 10 things that really led them to this particular assessment, that what we see taking place out in Las Vegas, or what took place out in Las Vegas, is truly a jihad operation. We're going to talk more about that when we come back, so stay tuned.
You're listening to Stand in the Gap Today, the daily radio program of the American Pastors Network. For more information, visit the APN website, AmericanPastorsNetwork.net. And now, let's rejoin Stand in the Gap Today.
Well, welcome back, ladies and gentlemen, and we are talking again with John Guandalo, who, of course, is the founder and the president of Understanding the Threat, about the fact that what took place out in Las Vegas looks like there is a jihadi connection to that. And, John, I know that not everybody across the network gets to hear the news at the bottom of the hour. Only some of our select stations play the Fox News at the bottom of the hour. But I'm sure you heard it. And it seems like this whole plot is thickening, and because they are reporting now that it appears as though this fella, this Stephen Paddock, really seemingly wanted to do, or at least considered doing, the same thing in the cities of Chicago and Boston. Now, more and more, it is appearing that it takes more than one person to want to do this, so it looks like there could be more behind what we see that is before us consistently in the media today.
Well, one thing is true, is the initial reports, which are always the initial reports, I will remind you, like they were at Fort Hood, like they were at the Fort Lauderdale airport shooter, like they have been, you know, the Little Rock, Arkansas shooter. All of these are jihad attacks. And on and on, Omar Mateen in Orlando. The first response from our government is they're mentally ill, or as in this case, Paddock had psychological issues. And then immediately, the FBI said, no connection to international terrorism. I mean, how in the world do you put that out several hours? I mean, nobody investigates that. You cannot know that unless you're leaving yourself a room later to say, unless he's known to the FBI. Now, if he was known to the FBI, and they knew he was involved in other criminal activity, but it wasn't that, well, that would be a different story. But there's been no evidence of that, or certainly no reporting of that. But this is the problem. We immediately knee-jerk, he has mental issues, and it's not terrorism. That's exactly what they said in the Fort Hood shooting before the FBI even arrived at Fort Hood, Texas. Mm-hmm. Not terrorism.
Is that something that the FBI will do, John, just to try to, put a guard around them until they find out more information? Or do you think that they are perhaps in some of these cases really trying to be a bit deceptive?
No, I don't think they're trying to be deceptive. I don't think they have a... I think the American public does not understand. The counterterrorism division in the FBI is catastrophically clueless about the real threat, specifically the Islamic movement and the Marxist movement in the United States, what they each are doing and how they're working together. Clueless. And the evidence, if some of your listeners are like, well, that's a little harsh, and I want to be clear, I know a lot of agents in the FBI. They're great people, friends of mine, and they work extremely hard, and there are thousands of agents that work extremely hard. But that's not what I'm saying. I'm saying they're still, organizationally, the counterterrorism division, catastrophically clueless about the threat. And here's my evidence of that. Number one, there's zero training in the FBI that teaches the agents the things that UTT teaches law enforcement. And 100% of the time when we go around the country and present, there are almost always federal agents in the room, often they're FBI Joint Terrorism Task Force personnel, and 100% of the time, at the end of the three-day program, they will say, number one, we've never heard this information, and number two, we believe it's critical to protecting our community. That
wow.
is what I'm talking about. That is what I'm talking about. So when people jump, you know, or try, although people – I think are afraid to really come at us. Nobody's coming at us hard for our assessment because, look, we have a track record. We have a very lengthy track record of nailing it when nobody else has nailed it. And I think that in this case, as it stands, as you and I are talking right now, please tell me, what's another viable assessment of this attack?
That's right.
Based on just, I'm talking about based on facts, not all this stuff that's floating around. Just hard, concrete facts. A jihadi operation is the most viable, you know, assessment.
John, let me ask you this. Have you seen the pictures that have emerged of the crime scene at the Mandalay Bay Resort? Have you seen those?
I've seen some of them, yes.
Well, I've got a number of friends that are sharpshooters and that are, you know, military background experts. And one of them pointed out something to me, and I don't want to get off track here, but it was just interesting. He showed me a picture from the room, and there were these stacked up clips in a very organized fashion. And he made a point because of his military background. He said, you never see someone stack clips in that way where they can get to them in an organized fashion unless someone has had some type of military training or military background. And all the reports that have come out about Stephen Paddock is he never served in the military. He had no military training. He had no military weapons training. And yet he is able to get a hold of these weapons. These clips are stacked in an organized military style fashion. And yet we're to believe that he did all of this by himself. What you just said, John, I couldn't agree with more. Provide another viable explanation other than the fact there's got to be something deeper going on here. I'd love to have your thoughts.
Well, I concur. I'd take it a step farther. From a military standpoint, I'm just telling you what the police have already reported. They did say that there is evidence that he was targeting the fuel tanks that are, those are long range. I think they were like 900 yards away from his hotel window.
That's correct.
But he
That's
had 308, correct. He had 308 sniper rifles that, and the machine gun that apparently he was targeting. And when he was firing on the crowd, he had fire discipline. I mean, he stayed on the soft target. and I'm sorry if this is a little rough for your audience, but from a military perspective, he stayed on mission. That was his mission. So he didn't get distracted at other things that were going on when vehicles were arriving, because he was shooting for, I guess, approximately 10 minutes. That is a long time from beginning to the time it ended. And some reports are saying it was a little longer than that. So I concur. Now, the question is, you know, first of all, we had an investigator on Fox News who gave his assessment, but I don't think you need to be a trained interrogator or interviewer to know that Stephen Paddock's brother, in the both in the news interviews and then the you know, being questioned by the FBI, I mean, he's lying. So the question is, what's he why is he lying? What is his knowledge of what's going on? I mean, he made some misstatements. And so I'm not just saying I read body language things. I mean, he made misstatements. The investigators have, I mean, I think it slipped out a little bit, but, that, you know, the fact that he made misstatements. He has periods of time where he's gone and they write it off as he's on a cruise or something. And I would say, based on what I saw and based on what you just said, and I know that, you know, I've seen those pictures, my guess is you don't do that unless you got some training. And so the question is, where did he get the training? And again, that fits more into what we're talking about, because it's clear. The idea, which I talked about a few minutes ago, that he's just a whack job. He snapped. How is that a viable option? There is no evidence that he's quote-unquote snapped. Now they're trying to say because he's on Valium. Yep. You know, Valium makes you – I mean, just come on. These are not serious analytical, you know, once-over of this event.
Well,
so
if he would
I agree with you.
Yeah, if he would have snapped, you know, he would have done this all of a sudden. But, you know, this whole thing looks like he predetermined to do it maybe for weeks or months or even up to a year. And so, you know, when a person snaps, they don't have that long time of planning. You know, you mentioned three more particular foundational points that led you to this assessment, including in recent days, jihadis have launched attacks in Europe. You talk about the target of the attack as well as the method and execution of the attack. And when you put all five of these elements together, you are absolutely certain, are you not, John, that this is a jihadi event?
I would say as clear as you can be on that. You know, what I'm saying is this is the assessment from our organization as the facts stand on the table even today. The same thing we said Monday stands today. And all the evidence that's coming in now about him, law enforcement saying he probably had help, he clearly, based on the evidence, some of what you just said, the way he prepared, the way he cased hotels, now we know in other cities, to look at, to actually take the time to rent a room, to look out the window, and do all that stuff. Yes, this is still our assessment that this was a jihadi operation.
Ladies and gentlemen, you're listening to John Guandolo, who, of course, is the president and founder of Understanding the Threat, giving us information on Stand in the Gap today that you probably have not heard anywhere else. But the information that you're hearing today from John is information based on fact. A lot of the things that we are hearing in the national media today is based on emotion or things that are fabricated. So don't you go away. When we come back, we're going to continue this conversation on jihadi impact on Las Vegas.
Americans are a freedom-loving people. Wouldn't it be great if you could carry a copy of the essential documents that outline our freedoms written by our nation's founders in your pocket so you can refer to it every day? Well, now you can. Stand in the Gap Radio has found something you're sure to like, the Patriot's Essential Liberty Pocket Guide. The handy guide is a slim 6.5 by 3.5 inches, yet it includes the Declaration of Independence, the U.S. Constitution, the preamble to the Bill of Rights, and other influential documents, including, in the words of our founders, topical quotes from America's founders, plus a listing of online resources for further research by the serious-minded or the just plain curious. To see and request your copy of the Patriot's Essential Liberty Pocket Guide and make your tax-deductible gift of any amount, go to AmericanPastorsNetwork.net. That's AmericanPastorsNetwork.net. Let us hear from you today. Thank you, and God bless you.
Hi, everybody. This is Jimmy DeYoung in Jerusalem, Israel. You often hear me on Stand in the Gap Today with Sam, Dave, and Gary. Guess what? We're all coming to Israel. Love to have you come and go with us. The dates are March the 7th through the 21st. That will include 10 days in Israel, 4 days in Petra, one of the most unique cities in all the world. If you need more information, the itinerary, the exact dates, also the information about cost, call this number, 423-825-6247. That's 423-825-6247. Ask for Jody. She can give you all the information. As Stand in the Gap Today and Prophecy Today go host a tour to Israel. Next year in Jerusalem, we're looking forward to you being here with us.
So what would you do with an extra $500 a month in your budget? $500. This isn't hypothetical, by the way. This is something you may need to think about very soon if you decide to become a member of MediShare. MediShare is a way to pay for your health care, and typically it costs $500 less per month for a family versus other health care plans. So seriously, think about this. You could pay off loans, pay down a mortgage, save the money for retirement, donate to charity. That would be a big deal. But you know what? Here's the best thing. MediShare works. It has 250,000 members, and it's growing fast. With MediShare, not only do you save, you don't have to pay for things you don't believe in either, and that is a beautiful thing too. So here's how you can find out more, and you might actually wind up saving even more than $500 a month. So check into it. Here's the number. Call 844-45-BIBLE. That's 844-45-BIBLE. Now available in Montana. Call 844-45-BIBLE.
You're listening to Stand in the Gap Today, the daily radio program of the American Pastors Network. For more information, visit the APN website, AmericanPastorsNetwork.net. And now, let's rejoin Stand in the Gap Today.
Ladies and gentlemen, you're receiving information on Stand in the Gap Today from John Grandalo of UTT about the speculation that took place out in Las Vegas that you'll not hear anywhere else. And as I said, it's really more than speculation. What John is sharing is information based on fact. And before we go on and conclude this particular segment and this program, John, I am sure there's more information at your website that people can benefit from. Would you mind just sharing that with our audience at this point in time, please?
Absolutely. That would be great. Yes, understandingthethreat.com is the website, understandthethreat.com. You can follow us on Twitter at UTT_USA, and we encourage you at the website to sign up for the newsletter. We have a YouTube channel, Understand the Threat, Facebook, Understand the Threat. And so we just encourage you to do all that because you'll get information, certainly over Twitter, consistently through the day, two articles a week, and then, of course, the resources page on the website, which we would encourage people to use.
Okay, folks, and I would encourage you to go there. And before I go to Dave, you know, it's interesting, just shortly before we went on the air, I received a bit of information on 16 questions that need to be asked that the mainstream media doesn't want to talk about, John. Questions like, were there additional shooters? Because a taxi driver reportedly captured a video of an automatic weapon being fired from a lower level window. Also, why are law enforcement authorities discussing another suspect on the fourth floor that the mainstream media is not talking about? In addition to that, how did someone with no military background that supposedly wasn't a gun guy at all able to operate such advanced weapons and kill so many people in such a short period of time? A lot of these questions are out there that the mainline media is not addressing. What do you think about that? Any comments you'd like to share with our listeners?
Just that I just caution people on some of the things that are out there are not true. I think the question about how does a guy like this shoot, how can he be so effective, unfortunately, at what he did if he has no training? Well, obviously he has training. And the question is, where did he get the training? If you're going to say this guy had no training, I'm going to tell you, I'm not buying it. He had training somewhere, from civilians, from terrorists, from, Marxists. He had some training somewhere. Just based on how he operated, he's actually doing surveillance. He's doing pre-mission, operational preparation and pre-planning of reconning the target sites. And my guess is, as they keep digging, they're going to find his pre-operational methods were pretty good. And so where do you learn that if you have no law enforcement military background? Well, that question answers itself. You're learning at someplace not good, which means if that's true, we're talking about a guy that is either ideologically aligned with jihadists or with Marxists, likely. I mean, is he just a guy who all on his own decided, I'm going to use what talents I have and I'm going to go train myself? Is that a possibility? Yes. But again, based on all the facts we know, it's all pointing in one direction.
John, let me ask you this. You said you had seen some of the photographs from the crime scene, as have I, and I want to be real careful here because of our listening audience. Some of the pictures are very graphic. There is a picture out there. It's been shown on Fox News. You see what is supposedly Stephen Paddock's legs, his body as he's lying there after he supposedly took his life. The question I have is, now they're saying, John, that when the first security guard at the Mandalay Bay Hotel showed up on the scene within the first 9 minutes, maybe even within the first 5 minutes, and Paddock fired through the door, hit him in the leg. Now they're saying that there's all kinds of evidence that he was going to try to escape the room and survive and not die. He was going to try to escape, and yet they're saying he ultimately took his life with what I have heard, John, is a handgun. In the pictures in the room around his body, there is no handgun there. So how in the world does a guy take his life with a long rifle that is so long that you can't reach it with either your thumb or your finger to push the trigger? Does that make sense? How does all this fit together?
It does. So a couple comments. I have seen a photograph with the a revolver within 2 feet of his head.
I have not seen that, so that changes things. Okay, sure.
Yeah, and based on my experience, both as an investigator and I was also a paramedic for over 10 years, and I've, obviously been in combat, so I've seen a lot of that, and it did look like the wounds are consistent with somebody who killed themselves, because originally there was a source that was putting out that the tactical team was in a gunfight with him and killed him. That appears to be not true. But the thing I want to say is, we don't know that his escape plan was so he could live. And I want to be clear of that. He clearly had a plan to get out of the room, but he also had a vehicle that had explosives in it. There were other things. My guess is the plan was to go farther, was to draw, attention to the hotel, escape, take with him what he needs to fight his way to the car and go do whatever it was. Now that's
and maybe
that's
go.
I want to be very clear.
Yeah, and maybe go blow up those jet fuel tanks that were not too far away. That would have been truly a disaster. We're rapidly running out of time, and I want to ask Dave to close us in prayer in a moment. But as we look at a solution to all of this, John, what must our government do to be more adequately effective in dealing with terrorism in America today?
Oh, well, they could start by doing their job. And I'll start at the federal level. Pardon me if that sounds harsh for my federal friends listening. But at this point, I don't quite frankly care. We have, once again, dead Americans on our streets, just like in Boston, just like in Fort Lauderdale, just like in Denver, just like in San Bernardino, just like in Little Rock, Arkansas, just like in Arlington, Virginia, and New York, just like at Fort Hood, Texas. And so regardless of what comes out of this, it's pretty clear this is pointing in a direction. And it begins with, you cannot put something like this in context if you do not understand the Islamic threat, the Islamic movement, which 100% of their movement, the individuals and all the jihadi organizations, mm-hmm. say we are Muslims waging jihad to establish mm-hmm. Islamic State under Sharia, and we must know the Marxist movement, what they're doing, and you've got to go after them, crush them, and destroy them, mm-hmm. or else we are going to lose the republic. They are mm-hmm. after the roots of the republic, and they're winning. And it, mm-hmm. with more time, we could talk about just that aspect of it, but that's what they need to do, and they have to do professional analysis based on who the enemy says they are and why they're fighting.
Amen. John Guandalo, thank you very much for being with us. Dave, just give us a quick prayer, if you would, please, on these matters.
Father, thank you for men like John who are willing to speak the truth as it is. I pray you'd bless him, protect him, prosper what he's doing, and then, Father, do help our national leadership to be honest and admit the truth. Define it so that it can ultimately be defeated, and we'll thank you in Jesus' name.
Thank you for joining in today, ladies and gentlemen, and we want to remind you that in 23 hours we will be back, and David New will be with us tomorrow, so we trust that you'll be there by the radio or the computer. Keep looking up. The best is yet to come.
We hope you've enjoyed listening to Stand in the Gap today with Sam Rohr, Gary Dahl, and David Kistler. Brought to you by the American Pastors Network. Every day on this station, we address the most urgent issues undermining the culture from a biblical and constitutional perspective. APN takes seriously the command to be salt and light in this culture. Our mission is to declare truth into the public square, bringing a biblical worldview to the issues of the day. We seek to build a dynamic network of pastors across the nation who hold firmly to the authority of Scripture and boldly preach the whole counsel of God. This ministry is supported through the prayers and financial support of people like you, and we urge you to do all you can to help the American Pastors Network accomplish this mission. To learn more, visit www.americanpastorsnetwork.net and help us with your donation today. Find out how we're impacting the culture and how you can join in the mission. Join us again tomorrow for Stand in the Gap today.